ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। Welcome everyone to the Mandir of Shishi Radhamadan Mohanji, Shriman Mahaprabhu, Shishi Lakshmi Nrsingadev, where our founder Acharyas is Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, under whose lotus feet we have chosen to take shelter. And those of you who are watching online tonight, we welcome you. And to text in questions, comments, you can dial 650-245-7018. That's 650-245-7018. There's also a number on your screen that will show you how to get onto a conference call so that you can speak live into the temple room. And thank you again for joining us tonight. And in the appearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the appearance of the Lord means the appearance of his devotees also, because Krishna never goes anywhere alone. Just as the king always travels with his retinue, similarly the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes with all of his devotees and assistants. And when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared 500 years ago, he also caused his devotees and eternal associates to appear in this world. Interestingly, they appeared in many impious places, unlike when Krishna appears. Normally, his devotees appear in holy dhams, but many of the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in places that were not considered holy places. Of course, because they appeared there, they became holy places. But this is a symptom of his campaign, which was to bring everyone from every part of the world, regardless of their birth or position, into the loving fold of his Sankirtan movement, and to cause everyone all over the world to chant Hare Krishna without discrimination. Sanatan Goswami was from a very respectable Brahmana family at the time, 500 years ago, approximately 527 years ago, several weeks when he appeared. Sanatan Goswami was employed in the government, which was at that time a Muslim government, and he, due to his association with people in the government, was considered by the Brahmana community to be an outcast. He had given up his status in society by working and living in the environment of the Muslim king. Actually, he and his brother Rupa Goswami had become confidants of the king, were actually managing the government at the time because they were so expert. Of course, interestingly, they had been studying Srimad Bhagavatam even before they met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Rupa Goswami wrote his famous Hansa Duda before meeting Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They also had created at their home a new Vrindavan, which was a replica of Vrindavan. So it wasn't that they weren't acquainted with the Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavat philosophy. And of course, esoterically, they were associates of the Supreme Lord in the spiritual world as manjaris, or assistants who help in the Radha Krishna's pastimes. Be that as it may, Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami were both employed in a Muslim government. And when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came through that area in Ramakeli, they had gone to visit him and had realized that they had been wasting their lives. This is an experience that people have when they meet the Supreme Personality of Godhead or one of his representatives, and that is, oh my, what have I been doing with my life? They have an oh wow experience, and they realize that whatever they have, whatever they've accumulated, whatever status they have, it's meaningless, and that their only desire in life becomes going back to Godhead, making advancement towards the lotus feet of Krishna. So this was the experience that Sanatan and Rupa Goswami had when they met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramakeli. And they went home and began making plans to give up their positions. Now that's not so easy. Someone may have the desire within their heart, but then actually getting out of the entanglement one's in is another question altogether. Because the material nature is unlimitedly entangling. And even though one has the desire, one may have obligations. And Rupa Goswami left first, and apparently it took him some time, maybe up to a year, to take care of his family affairs and everything else. And Sanatan Goswami was left behind with some money, a lot of money, because they were making a lot of money, millions. And Rupa Goswami left that money in the care of a grocer. Apparently at that time, if you wanted to put your money in a safe place, you'd leave it with a local merchant who could hold it for you. So that's what he did. And once he left, he wrote a letter to Sanatan Goswami informing him. It was a cryptic letter. And however, Sanatan immediately understood that he... Actually, to back up a minute, when Sanatan Goswami, after Rupa Goswami left, the king came and... Well, first of all, Sanatan Goswami called in sick for a long time. He wasn't coming into work anymore and said that I'm ill. And so the king sent the royal physician to check up on him. And when the physician got to the house of Sanatan Goswami, he found there were several dozen Brahmins in the house in his employ who were teaching him Srimad Bhagavatam. They were going over the details of Srimad Bhagavatam. And he went back to the king and said, Sanatan's not sick at all. He's home studying Srimad Bhagavatam. So the king went himself to the house of Sanatan Goswami and said, are you going to work? Are you going to do this Hare Krishna thing? And Sanatan said, I'm doing the Hare Krishna thing. And I don't like my job anymore. I'm not coming back. And the king said, I can't run the government without you. You can't just walk away. You didn't give notice, nothing. And, I don't go for this. So you have a choice. You can either work or you can go to jail. Which would you like to do? So Sanatan Goswami wasn't going to work, so he went to jail. And then the king went off to fight a war. And meanwhile, Sanatan was in jail. And through messages, Rupa Goswami had revealed where the bribe money was. Essentially, that's what it was, to get out of jail. And it was a lot of gold. So when Sanatan was in jail, he negotiated with the jailer in a very expert way. First of all, he told him that you're a very learned man. You're a great saint and a sadhu. And Prabhupada mentions in his purport that this is humorous in a way, because actually the jailer typically was not an educated person and not very saintly either. And however, he accepted it. And Prabhupada mentions that when someone's given a position like that suddenly, then generally they take it. And then Sanatan informed the jailer that if you free me, I'm going to Mecca. And if you free someone and you allow them to go to Mecca, then you yourself will be freed and God will look on you favorably. So this was a good argument for the jailer. He was a Muslim and he appreciated this very much, but it wasn't enough, because he told Sanatan, look, If I let you go, I'll have a lot of explaining to do. I'll be in trouble. So Sanatan started showing him gold. And he said, nah, can't do it. Still not enough. Then he showed him twice as much gold, and he gave him an excuse. He said, look, you tell the king when he comes back that you took Sanatan out to answer the call of nature by the Ganga, and he jumped in with his chains on, and we never found him. And you can have the gold. How about that? And the jailer said, okay. So one night, he went out and he cut the shackles off of Sanatan. And then Sanatan was a political prisoner, escapee, and he had to hide himself. So he took one servant with him named Ishana, and they headed through the mountains. They couldn't go through the city or by the ramparts. They had to go up through the hills, through the wilderness. And as they were traveling, they came to an inn way up in the mountains before they had to go through very wild area. And as they were checking in that place, the innkeeper was extremely accommodating. Too accommodating. There's an old saying that too much devotion is the sign of a thief. And Sanatan had been involved in diplomacy and politics for many years, and he could understand that something's wrong. So he went to his servant, Ishan, and he said, did you bring any money with you? And Ishan said, yes, I brought 7 gold coins. And unbeknownst to Sanatan or Ishana, there was a mystic also staying in that inn, palm reader, kind of a psychic person, and he could understand when Sanatan arrived that these two were carrying a sizable amount of wealth, and they were ruffians, and they had planned to kill Sanatan in the middle of the night and take whatever he had and just throw the body somewhere. No one would know the difference because they looked like they were on the run anyway. So understanding that something was wrong, Sanatan asked his servant, he said, give me the money you have. So Ishana handed over 7 gold coins. Sanatan went with them like this to the innkeeper and said, you take these. And the innkeeper said, oh, this is amazing because we were just about to kill you for them. You've saved me. Saved me from this sinful act. He said, this mystic here had told that you had 8 gold coins. And Sanatan said, all I ask is you get me through the wilderness so I can escape and go the other way. I can't obviously travel by the ramparts. And so he agreed, and the man took Sanatan and Ishana through the wilderness, and then when they came to the other side, Sanatan turned to his servant Ishana and said, I think you have some balance. And Ishana said, yes, I have 1 more gold coin. Sanatan said, you keep it, you go back. I'm going on alone. And so he bid everyone farewell. At that time, he was without money, and he was wearing just a simple torn quilt on his back, and he became happy. It's mentioned in this verse, which always impresses me, that at that moment when he turned his back on everything, as mentioned later by one of the biographers of the 6 Goswamis, Srinivasacharya, he wrote, that's the Sanata and Rupa, the other Goswamis. Most of them came from very aristocratic backgrounds, especially Sanata and Rupa. They were wealthy. They were in the thick of the most aristocratic society. And tyakvaturnam ashesha mandalapati. Immediately they gave it up. And how? What was their mood? Tuchavat. Tuchavat. Everyone say tuchavat. As if it was just insignificant. Tuchavat. And now he was traveling by himself with nothing, going towards Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and all his fear went away and all his anxiety went away. He was simply happy. So this is a nice indication. There's so much burden that I carry on my back, in my mind, by being connected to some identity in this material world and having so many so-called possessions and responsibilities and so forth, that I'm under constant pressure and fear of losing everything. I have a vested interest in this world. Therefore, in Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said, Payam dvitiya abhinibesha tasyad ishad apetasya viparya yosmitihi. A living entity who is eternally a servant of Krishna and is now in an adverse condition, his mind and heart are filled with fear because of being disconnected from Krishna and Krishna consciousness. So, whoops, went too loud. And so, as he was traveling, Sanatan Goswami then came to a clearing and he saw one of his relatives there, Srivas, Srikant. And Srikant was working for the government also. He was buying horses, expensive horses, so he had tons of gold. And he had spotted Sanatan Goswami, actually, from a distance. And he went over and they had a conversation. Sanatan told him how he had escaped from jail and so forth. And then Srikant said, you should stay here and get cleaned up, get some proper clothes, and then you can leave. And then Sanatan said something also very telling. He said, I won't stay for one night. I won't stay for one moment. I'm leaving immediately. This is the mood of somebody who is on their way to Krishna. That avyarta kalatvam is one of the symptoms of someone who's eagerly pursuing Krishna consciousness. They won't waste a second. Please stay overnight. I won't stay overnight. I won't stay for 1 minute. I'm leaving right now. I'm going to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In whatever condition or whatever it takes, I'm going. And this is necessary to have this kind of intention. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Yesham tvantakatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandva muhanir mukta bhajanti mam dridavrita. That when one becomes free from sinful reactions in one's life, then one develops this firm determination to serve Krishna at all costs. Interestingly, that there are so many reactions. We have so much karma that when leaving this body, there's so much accumulated, so many impressions in our mind, so many experiences we've had in the material world from every direction, and so many known and unknown sins that we've committed, that the Shastra says we can't even experience all of that. And Daivanetrena, there's an arrangement made for the next body so that I can go through and try to become purified again. And whatever impressions I have in my mind and whatever experiences I've had, they come to me as impulses. And Rupa Goswami in his book, Nectar of Instruction, says, Vacho vegam manasa krodha vegam jihva vegam udarapasta vegam itan vegam yo vishyehe tadhira saravamapi mam prithivim sashishyat. That in order to progress on the path of yoga, one must learn to tolerate these urges that come from all the different senses. And what is the process? One must tolerate, tolerate, tolerate. This is how to become purified. One must tolerate, tolerate, tolerate. Because when one tolerates the urges of the senses and doesn't react to them, then gradually the urges go away. However, if someone acts on them, then they are enlarged, and one's obligated to revisit them over and over again. So Rupa Goswami begins his teachings of Nectar of Instruction by saying you should tolerate all these different urges, and one who can do that becomes a master, a spiritual master, because no longer does he or she have a vested interest in the material world. He's not a slave to the senses. He can follow Krishna and not follow the senses. Most people are obligated to the senses and they have to follow. So they're slaves. So Sanatan was free And when asked, you know, stay here for some comfort, get cleaned up, put on some proper clothes, look like a gentleman, then go on, he said, nope, I'm leaving now. Dridavrata, firm determination, dridavrat. And so he went on, and he, Varanasi, he went to Varanasi. And there he went to the house of Chandrasekhar. Once he got to Varanasi, he understood Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had arrived there, so he was very joyful. And he went to the house of Chandrasekhar, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was staying, and he went and sat outside the house. And Mahaprabhu, being omniscient, told Chandrasekhar, there's a Vaishnav just outside your door, go out and get him. And Chandrasekhar obediently opened the door and looked out, looked around, came back in, and he said, there's no Vaishnav out there. He said, I see a Muslim man, but there's no Vaishnav. Actually, he said, I don't see any Vaishnav. And then Mahaprabhu said, do you see anyone at all? And he said, I just see a Muslim, no Vaishnav. He said, tell him to come in. So Chandrasekhar was a little surprised, but he went and he said, Mahaprabhu's calling you, come in. So Sanatan, who was dressed like a Muslim, he came in, and Mahaprabhu immediately embraced him. And Sanatan and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu both began spontaneously weeping, crying, due to being reconnected. And then, of course, Sanatan was a little shy. He thought, oh, my Lord, don't please touch me. I'm impure and so forth. And Mahaprabhu was even cleansing the body of Sanatan with his own hands. And then he told Sanatan to go get a shave, get cleaned up. And he said that he should be clean. Vaishnav should be clean. And so Sanatan Goswami went and shaved. And then he got some cloth from Chandrasekhar, who offered him some nice new cloth, and Sanatan tore it up and wore it in pieces. And then he came back to Mahaprabhu, was very happy to see him cleaned up, but Mahaprabhu kept glancing at this blanket. Actually, he had received this blanket from Srikant. That's one thing he had accepted from his brother-in-law. It was a fancy kind of wool blanket. Apparently it was valuable. And now he was cleaned up, looked like a Vaishnav, but Mahaprabhu kept glancing at the blanket. He didn't have to say anything. Sanatan got the idea. Mahaprabhu doesn't like the blanket. So he went down to the river where people were washing their clothes, and he met this Bengali mendicant. And he said, listen, I got a proposal for you. I'll trade you this for that. And the mendicant had an old torn up quilt. And Sanatan had this really expensive blanket, and the Bengali mendicant said, please, why are you harassing and teasing me like this? Why would you do that? He said, no, I'm serious. I want yours. You take mine. And he said, okay. So they traded. And then when he came back, Sanatan came before Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was unlimitedly pleased. And he said that Krishna doesn't want any last vestiges of material desire, material attachment. And he said, just as a physician makes sure that the patient is completely cleared of disease before he releases him. And then Sanatan and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, lucky for us, they sat down and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Sanatan Goswami. And his teachings are there within the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And it's very profitable for any devotee to go through those teachings that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave to Sanatan Goswami. Just as when Shukadev and Parikshit sat down to talk, everyone wanted to hear the conversation because the conversations that take place between great devotees have to be about Krishna. And according to the caliber of devotee, then you can judge how deep the conversation will go. And that's what Vaishnavas are interested in hearing. these very deep, instructive conversations between the Lord and his devotees, between Vaishnavas. By that, one can actually understand who is Krishna, because that's who they're talking about, and they have deep realization. So Mahaprabhu began his teachings, and I'm going to read a few of the verses that in the beginning he gave to Sanatana Goswami and some of the teachings he gave. But as he began teaching Sanatana Goswami, he gave an allegory, which is about a poor man who's suffering for want of money and any connections in life, no prospect at all. And then he meets an astrologer named Sarvagya, who's very powerful and can see the man's past and future. And when the astrologer looks at the poor man's chart, he realizes that actually he's not poor at all, but he's very wealthy, because his father was wealthy and his father passed away. They were estranged. And his father left him his whole treasury. And so the astrologer could immediately look at the man's chart and say, you're suffering needlessly. You're actually a wealthy man. And then Mahaprabhu points out that this information given by the astrologer is parallel to the words of the Vedas that are meant to be distributed in human society, because they come along and they inform the living entities who are walking down the Haight-Ashbury up to no good, or up to what they think is good, but it's simply an entanglement without any knowledge, and informs them that actually you're not really part of this world at all. You come from a different origin altogether, and your father is the most wealthy, Krishna. And the Vedas wake up the living entity from this dream of trying to enjoy material life and inform him. And then Mahaprabhu said, but just knowing that you're not part of this world and that your father is the richest person isn't enough. You also have to know how to go out and get the treasure. And therefore the astrologer tells the poor man exactly where to find the treasure and how to dig for it as well. And he gives him some warnings about digging on it in various sides that they will lead to obstacles. On one side, there's the path of materialism. There's the path of Jnanakanda, trying to merge with the Supreme. There's the path of yoga, mystic meditation. One becomes entangled in that. And he warned him against all these other paths. And he said, but on the eastern side where the treasure is buried, you can dig. And this is compared to bhakti. He said, this is the easy path. This is the sure path. It's the direct path. And if you simply engage in bhakti, then you'll be able to dig up the treasure, and then all your problems are finished. And Mahaprabhu said that when a poor man realizes his wealth, he digs it up, now he can live a happy life. So he said, similarly, when one comes in contact with the Vedic knowledge and learns about his relationship with Krishna and then is engaged in the activities of bhakti, which connect one to Krishna, then one can actually enjoy life. One becomes happy. And one's prospect is beyond imagination, going back home, back to Godhead. Comments, reflections so far?
You can turn Ragini up just a tiny little bit. Okay.
Yes, Rasika Shiromani, please.
This one struck me you were saying this is the mood of someone on their way to Krishna, avyartha kalatham, they don't waste even a moment.
Nice. Yes. And actually that term avyartha kalatvam is mentioned in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings to Sanatana Goswami as one of the symptoms of bhava. One's heart is actually melting in love of God and one's developing advanced symptoms of love for God. One of those symptoms is avyartha kalatvam. Everyone say avyartha kalatvam. Avyartha kalatvam, which means that one is unwilling to waste even one moment outside of being engaged in Krishna consciousness. This is a sure sign. Yes, Mukharavin.
I like the point that when you quoted the Bhagavad Gita 7th chapter 28th verse, like how to become purified, yesham tvantagatam papam, in which you told tolerate, there is no other way to become purified.
Yeah. The way to eradicate sinful reactions, tolerate them. Because if you respond to them, you create another reaction. That's interesting. And throughout the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about toleration, how you must tolerate the urges of the senses. Dhiras, one must become dhira, tira, which means that one has the wherewithal to tolerate the urges of the material senses and all kinds of inconveniences in the material world. As a matter of fact, a devotee sees that when inconveniences come, it's past sinful reactions coming, and he tolerates and actually enjoys knowing that they're simply being expended now. They're going away. He has clear perspective. If one thinks that I must be happy in this world and by some kind of arrangement, I'll become happy. I just need several more air conditioners or something. I find in just running a household that something's always broken somewhere. I notice with rich people, they have a handyman that lives in-house constantly. If you have enough wealth, you can do this, and you can have somebody who just goes around and fixes everything. And that makes it a little bit better, but still, it's the nature of the material energy to constantly fall apart. Whatever arrangement we make will not endure in any case. Nice point. Yes. Shraddha Devi Dasi.
I like the Tuchyavat concept, like when you give up something, the attitude with which you give it up. They gave up so much of money, but they considered that to be a small thing, a touch thing, and gave up. On the other hand, we can give up the same money but have that thing in our head that it's a huge and a big thing that I gave up. You know, the attitude with which you give up things.
Yeah, it depends what you're replacing it with also.
That's true.
As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the person who has a higher taste easily gives up lower considerations. So if one doesn't quite have that higher taste and then gives up something prematurely, there's possibility could go back to it later. That happens. But Narada Muni says that, hey, at least you tried. That goes on your record, you get the progress for trying. But one shouldn't also be artificial. We can't imitate and try to give up everything, simply wear a loincloth and so forth, and renounce everything in a way in which will be that we're not ready for, and we may be then out of balance and then gravitate back towards the way we were. Yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, earlier in the class you were talking about like how we carry certain impressions maybe from our previous lives. I'm not sure. They inhibit in us as impulses. The impressions which maybe we carry from previous lives are within us as impulses. And also you were mentioning about the urges of the senses. So are they the same?
Yes. Those sense impulses come to us through the agency of the mind. Manas. There's manas, and then there's the, above the mind is the intellect. The mind brings to us these various impulses. They're recorded there as on a spool or like on an iPod or something, iPad, like on a digital recorder. They all go in there. You may have forgotten all the things you recorded or that are on your computer. I know I have. I think I have 37,000 emails in my mailbox. Some of them I've read. And there are so many impulses that come through that are recorded there, especially due to our interaction with various sense objects in the material world. And then the intellect has a way of discriminating between, you know, what's good and what's bad, what to take, what not to take. And therefore, the intellect should be informed by Shastra and purified by Shastra so that one can make proper choices to do what's right and not become more entangled. And that's not just an intellectual exercise, but after some practice, evam prasanna manaso bhagavad bhakti yogata bhagavat tattva vijnana mukta sangha sujayate. One has the intelligence directed by Shastra, and then one acts on the Shastra, and then one gets a practical realization and actually becomes situated steadily in devotional service because of that. And it's a fact that when one is able to not respond to the many impulses, that they gradually close up and they go away. And then one's free from the pushings of the senses. They no longer push so hard as to influence one in various ways that distract one from one's devotional service. Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhuji, you quoted one Bhagavad Gita shloka, right, which said, unless you give up all the sinful activities, you can't take up devotional service.
With determination.
With determination, okay. Yeah, maybe that answers my question, but I was about to ask, like, is it not the other way, that if you don't take up the devotional service, you won't be able to let go of the sinful activities? I thought it was the other way as well, so I just wanted your comment on that.
Yeah, by taking up devotional practice, then one helps to purify the urges, and one becomes fortified with knowledge and detachment that help one to steady oneself in devotional service as well. Yes, Malini.
Ji, when you said that when Sanatan Goswami gave up all his material possessions, then, like Tuchavat you were saying, and then he felt a freedom that he's now able to execute his devotional service properly. But I felt that was exactly opposite in the material world, because you think that the more money or the more possessions that you have, the more you're free to do things that you want to do. But I was thinking that's a good aspiration to have in future, that the day when you give up all your possessions, you can get that kind of freedom which you can aspire for.
Yeah, even as one's living in this world and has possessions, one can experience that by engaging them in Krishna's service. Rupa Goswami taught us that we shouldn't push away anything as long as it can be used in Krishna's service. Anasaktasya vishayan yatarham upayunjita nirbanda Krishna sambande yukta vairagyam uchite prapanchika tatya buddhya hari sambandi vastana mumukshavi prityago vairagyam palgu kachite. It's false renunciation if you have something that you can use in the service of the Lord, but then you renounce it. It's, our path is not the path of renunciation anyway. But the Goswamis, because they came from these very aristocratic families, it's very much pointed out how they gave those things up and were able to take the life of mendicants very easily. However, it's not our goal necessarily just to give away everything and live without possessions. This is the path of renunciation, which is coveted by the gyanis, who are really after liberation from the material world. But the devotees aren't interested in liberation. They're interested in dedication. And when everything that we have, all the possessions that we have, are dedicated to Krishna's service, this was experienced the same freedom. Because a problem is, when I claim ownership over something, then I have to deal with it. Then it's my problem. And when I dedicate it to Krishna exclusively, then, well, the devotees also have a sense of anxiety in their responsibility for taking care of things for Krishna, but it's different than when one claims it for oneself. Therefore, the devotees have the Ishavasya spirit, that Krishna is the owner and controller of everything. Even recently I read a verse that a devotee sent to me, which was very interesting. I think I sent it out on a Shravanadi Jal, but it was uttered by, I think, Lord Brahma to Prithu Maharaj. Prithu Maharaj had been in great anxiety because he was trying to perform 100 sacrifices. And Indra was famous for performing 100 sacrifices. 100 sacrifices is hard. It's not like the ones we do here that cost $50 and takes 20 minutes to set up. These things were huge. I mean, they took monumental effort and billions of dollars to put together one sacrifice. So they spent all this money, and it was a big deal. It was this process for the age. In any case, Indra had performed 100 sacrifices, and Prithu Maharaj was at 99. He was about to perform the 100th sacrifice. And Indra got envious and was worried that now he's going to surpass me. So he came down to the sacrifice and disguised himself as a sannyasi. And it was an ashwamedha, a horse sacrifice, so he stole the horse. And he went away with the horse. And then Maharaj Prithu's son chased after Indra. But then he had his arrow drawn on his bow, but then he saw, oh, it's a sannyasi. And then, who was it who informed him that it wasn't a sannyasi? Someone was there. He said, no, that's not a sannyasi. But still, he wouldn't kill him because of the way he was dressed. But he chased him away, and Indra came back several times and stole the horse. Each time he dressed as a different kind of sannyasi. This is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, how the different kinds of bogus sannyasis came into the world because of Indra's example in stealing this horse. But in any case, it was a major blow. It was a huge obstacle for Prithu Maharaj. Right when he was about to finish his sacrifice, and Indra came down and ruined the whole thing. And there was no way around it. And then he became angry. He wanted to go after Indra and, you know, have revenge and stop him from doing that and so forth. And Srivastava was looking at, I believe it's Brahma who came down and told him, don't go for revenge. He said, just let Indra have it. And then he said, when something comes by destiny that's so far beyond you, that's the verse? Bravo to you. Fantastic. He said, Lord Brahma, my dear king, do not be agitated and anxious because your sacrifices have not been properly executed due to providential impediments. Kindly take my words with great respect. We should always remember that if something happens by providential arrangement, we should not be very sorry. The more we try to rectify such reversals, the more we enter into the darkest region of materialistic thought. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Sometimes the saintly or very religious person also has to meet with reversals in life. Such incidents should be taken as providential. Although there may be sufficient cause for being unhappy, one should avoid counteracting such reversals. For the more we become implicated in rectifying such reversals, the more we enter into the darkest regions of material anxiety. Lord Krishna has also advised us in this connection. We should tolerate things instead of becoming agitated. Thanks, Srivas. Good to have a pundit in the house. So, reversals, great reversals will come, and we must also see that they're providential and not become implicated ourselves in trying to reverse these things, but see how they're the mercy of the Lord. Actually, we see when Vidura was living in his house, there was politics because Duryodhan wanted to fight against the Pandavas and was being unreasonable with them, to say the least. And Vidura was a saintly person and was aligned with the Pandavas. So the family was split. And when Duryodhan was speaking against the Pandavas in his own house to Dhritarashtra, Vidura spoke up and he said, "This is all nonsense. Don't listen to Duryodhan. He's actually a snake." And Duryodhan became so angry that he berated Vidura in front of everyone, called him a low-class person, and said, "Get out of here before I beat you and leave you with nothing, including your breath," and so forth. And in that very moment, Vidura saw that it was Krishna's arrangement. Krishna had arranged this for him. Because it's really hard to get out of material entanglement. But if Krishna comes along and he gives you like an opportune moment where someone's like, "Get out." And it's like, "Oh, that's Krishna. Now I can go." So Vidura said, "That's Krishna. He's telling me I can go now." So he went outside, put his bow down, which was a sign that he was giving up his occupation. And he just went on padyatra for 20 years or so. I mean, he just traveled and went to all the holy places and saw Krishna everywhere. So the point is that the devotees seeing Krishna everywhere, when Akura was asked to go to Vrindavan to pick up Krishna, who asked him to go? Kamsa wanted to kill Krishna, so he asked his servant, that is Kamsa's servant, one of his servants is Akura, and he tells him, "Go pick up Krishna." He had this whole plan to kill him. So Akura took it as Krishna was giving him his mercy through Kamsa. How opportune is that? That the person who wants to kill Krishna is giving me an opportunity to go see him and drive him back to Mathura and so forth. And so he saw that as Krishna's mercy coming through Kamsa. So the devotees see how Krishna is giving his mercy through all kinds of situations and different kinds of people. What may seem to be the worst situation you've ever encountered in your life later on will turn out to be the actual opportunity of your lifetime that turned everything around. I mean, even in a mundane way, people say this all the time, but for devotees who are really motivated to get out of the material world, and it's hard, it's sticky, getting out of the material world. Somebody wrote me the other day and said that he compared material desires to when he makes chapati dough. And you know when it's too wet? You don't know how. And then it's on both hands and you're trying to make it, but you can't even grab anything because it's still stuck. And if you try to get it off one, it sticks to the other. He said, "That's how I feel. These material desires come." And he said, "Can you throw some more? Give me something that, you know, some dry flour for this, you know, would you do that?" He wanted some advice, some, you know, encouragement and so forth. And so devotees are always looking for that. When something comes along that jolts you, don't take it. That, if someone's got a vested interest in the material world, they may think, "Why is, I've done so many good things. Why is Krishna being so unkind?" But Krishna's never unkind. He's always got our best interest in mind. We just have to see, expand our consciousness to see how it's coming to us. Yes.
Prabhuji, Indra is a position, I assume, but how come even if it's a position, people elevated to that level become jealous at that? It always bewildered my mind, you know.
Well, contact with the material world is sticky. And especially when you have a lot of material facility, there's a way that you can become overcome by it. And, you know, if someone told you you're going to live for, you know, a couple million years and you have an unlimited credit card to spend on and no debts, you might not show up for Mangal Arati tomorrow. I don't know. It's entangling. The material world's entangling. In fact, it's interesting, you know, as human beings, we have a great opportunity because our life, as I was reading today in the Bhagavatam, the fourth canto, Prabhupada said that human beings live only for 60 to 80 years. Well, I'm 57. That's three more years is when the period ends. It's very short, actually. It's a really short ride, but one can attain perfection in one life, actually, especially with the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Whereas the demigods, even though Brahma is in really a perfected state, Satyaloka is right next to the spiritual world, and Brahma generally goes back to Godhead after he leaves his body. But still, he has to perform his duty for trillions of years. And even though so many other human beings can go back to Godhead, he has to wait till the end of his life. In any case, the material world's tricky. And there are ways in which, by proximity to the modes of material nature, one can become overcome. Prabhupada brings up the point that Brahma, Shiva, become influenced sometimes because their duty includes monitoring, manifesting. They're actually incarnations of the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance. And so sometimes there are incidents, which are mainly meant to teach others, because they're great controllers. The Shastra says they don't become waylaid necessarily by these things, but you can see the influence of the material nature. And the post of Indra is notorious. He's the king of heaven. I mean, heaven's like the best place you can find. Swarga is unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Much better than Waikiki or downtown Mountain View or anything like that. It's unbelievably opulent, and you know, you get whatever you want. You don't really get old. There's no worries there, so it's easy to slip into, you know, forgetfulness. That's why middle planets are better, because you have not so much misery that you can't concentrate, and not so much opulence that you can't concentrate either. We can see both sides. We can see hellish conditions here, and we can also see slightly heavenly conditions, like we can imagine them to some degree. It's an opportune platform, the human platform. I really like this analogy. I can't say it enough times that Mahaprabhu had explained to Sanatana Goswami about the astrologer. It's just such a neatly packaged analogy. And then about the Shastra coming and speaking to us. And let me see if I can find that section. Okay, so what is it? 127. Okay, great. Thank you very much. Yeah, before we even get to that, Lord Chaitanya tells Sanatana Goswami that what the constitutional position of the living entity is. And what is that constitutional position? What is it? This is vital information. Please tell me. It's the eternal servant of Krishna. So the Vaishnav means one who submits to God, one who is not trying to become God, not trying to connect himself with God's energy so he can do something wonderful in the material energy, but he simply has decided that God is Bhagavan, he's the Supreme Person, he submits himself. That's a Vaishnav. And only when one has that proper conception can one have the objective to practice serving God. First, you have to have the conception. Because if you have a conception in your mind or your heart that there is no God, or ultimately God is just amorphous energy, then where are you going to get the objective to serve some amorphous energy? It doesn't arise. So what Mahaprabhu was saying was it's vital for people to get this sambandha gyan, or information about our actual relationship with who? With Bhagavan. So according to one's method for investigating the absolute truth, one can come to three different conclusions. Vedanti tat tatvavidas tatvam yaj gyanamadvayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shadyate. That the Lord is realized in three different aspects according to different paths that one takes, either as impersonal Brahman or as the localized Paramatma within the heart, or as Bhagavan. But only when one has an inkling that God is the Supreme Person from whom all other energies and all other manifestations of the Lord, including Paramatma and Brahman, emanate, does one get the impetus to actually become an eternal servant and submit oneself. So it's necessary to have that conception, to get that information. There's one devotee was telling me that he never criticizes other devotees or anybody else because when anybody ever does something wrong, he says, oh, they must have not had enough information. He said, oh yeah, they didn't have enough information. Like they didn't get the memo. So there's a way that everyone's walking around without enough information. They're lacking information. So Mahaprabhu comes along and he says, your only problem is you're lacking information. And the information's there in the Vedic literature, and it's meant to be distributed so one can get it and then have this idea, this conception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then Jivera Swarupoi Krishnera Nityadas. It is the living entity's constitutional position to be an eternal servant of Krishna because he is the marginal energy of Krishna and a manifestation simultaneously one with and different from the Lord, like a molecular particle of sunshine or fire. Krishna has three varieties of energy. Here's Srila Prabhupada's purport to that verse. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains these verses as follows. Sri Sanatana Goswami asked Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who am I? In answer, the Lord replied, you are a pure living entity. You are neither the gross material body nor the subtle body composed of mind and intelligence. Actually, you are a spirit soul, eternally part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, Krishna. Therefore, you are his eternal servant. You belong to Krishna's marginal potency. There are two worlds, the spiritual world and the material world, and you are situated between the material and spiritual potencies. You have a relationship with both the material and spiritual world. Therefore, you are called the marginal potency. You are related with Krishna as one and simultaneously different. Because you are spirit soul, you are one in quality with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But because you are a very minute particle of spirit soul, you are different from the Supreme Soul. Therefore, your position is simultaneously one with and different from the Supreme Soul. The examples given are those of the sun itself and the small particles of sunshine and a blazing fire and the small particles of fire. Another explanation of these verses can be found in the Adi Lila, chapter 2, verse 96. And then Lord Chaitanya gives a verse from the Vishnu Purana, a couple of verses. Asia desha tasyagnir jochna vistaraniyata parasya brahmana shaktis tateidam akilam jagat. This is a beautiful analogy in one little neat verse from the Vishnu Purana that says, just as the heat and light come from a fire, and these are its energies, so similarly this entire universe is the emanation of the energy of the Lord. And in the Sri Ishapanishad we hear, Om Purnam Adak Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachite. How perfect is this material creation? Unbelievably well designed, beyond the imagination. I was just watching outside my window from my kitchen every day. There's a persimmon tree. It's the last tree with any fruit on it anywhere in the yard. And it's a stark contrast to the gray skies, because those persimmons are a very particular color. And they hang down, the leaves are gone, and all that's left is those persimmon-colored orbs hanging in the sky. And I'm counting the different living entities that come and visit the tree. There are crows, and then there are all different types of smaller birds, and then the squirrels. They all climb up on the tree, and they're eating the persimmons. And I was just thinking, I think every time I see that, what a perfect arrangement in nature. There's enough for the whole neighborhood, practically. The squirrel takes them, and I don't know how he carries them, but I saw one walking across the power line from where my house is across the street, carrying a persimmon in his mouth. And then he perched himself on the top of a fence, and he just turns it around and around and around and just sort of, you know, eating away. He ate half of it, and then he came back around, and he left the other half on outside of my porch. And he came back the next day to pick it back up again. Yeah, I left it right over there. There it is. And I was just thinking how everyone's being fed. Also, with those crows, they're following Chaturmasya all year long. Because, you know, in Chaturmasya, there's a vow people take where they don't eat with their hands. They only eat once a day. They put the food on the floor, and then they eat with their hands behind their back. And I watched the crows. They're eating the persimmon with their beak, and saying, you don't have any hands. How are you going to eat that? It's like following Chaturmasya. But everyone's being fed, and it's, you know, there's just a perfect arrangement everywhere in nature for the living entities to be taken care of. It's Purnam. It's completely perfect. And these are just the external energies of the Lord. So the Vishnu Purana is teaching us that the source of all these wonderful energies that are achintya, they're inconceivable, even the material energy, is coming from a source, and that's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Krishna naturally has three energetic transformations, and these are known as the spiritual potency, the living entity potency, and the illusory potency. Originally, Krishna's energy is spiritual, and the energy known as the living entity is also spiritual. However, there's another energy called illusion, which consists of fruitive activity, and that is the Lord's third potency. What is the Lord's third potency? All the creative energies which are inconceivable to a common man exist in the Supreme Absolute Truth. These inconceivable energies act in the process of creation, maintenance, and annihilation. O chief of the ascetics, just as there are two energies possessed by fire, namely heat and light, these inconceivable creative energies are the natural characteristics of the Absolute Truth. And then he talks about how the living entity, although he's the same quality as the Supreme Personality of God, it can become influenced by the illusory energy and becomes captured by it. And this is a problem. Krishna Buli Shejiv Anadi Bahrumuk Ataiva Maya Tari Deha Shangshara Duk. Everyone knows Duk, right? And this is where it comes from. Forgetting Krishna, the living entity has been attracted by the external feature from time immemorial. Therefore, the illusory energy, Maya, gives him all kinds of misery in his material existence. In the material condition, this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu directly teaching Sanatana Goswami. So he's giving these basic teachings. And very important to note how Sanatana Goswami approached Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He knew 7 or 8 languages perfectly, was a great scholar. And when he approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said, "I don't know anything. I'm a complete fool. I didn't even know who I am." And others say that I'm a scholar and I even believe them. That's how foolish I am. He said, "But I don't," he said, "who am I and why am I suffering? Please tell me." And so this is an example how one should approach a teacher for spiritual knowledge. Actually, any teacher, but especially when one wants to become knowledgeable about Krishna. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, "Tad vidhi pranipatena priprashnena sevaya upadakshanti de jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshina." That 3 elements should be there if you want to learn about the Absolute Truth. What are they?
Service.
Pranipatena. Service. Definitely service should be there. You should go rendering service. In fact, "Tad vignanartam sa gurum eva bigachet samitpani Samitpani Kshotriyam Brahmanishtam." It's mentioned in the Upanishads how one should approach Guru, and that is bringing wood. That is, the Guru lights fire every day to do fire yajna, so the disciple will go out and collect firewood. It's menial service, and bring the firewood. Inexplicably, actually it is explainable, but there's a way in which when one serves someone with superior knowledge, that person's heart opens to the student, and the contents come out. If you go with a service attitude, then the person will be inclined to give you everything, including blessings. So service, what else?
Submissive
attitude. This is pranipat. Pranipat means that you should go bowing down in a submissive way so that the person can work with you. Otherwise, if you think, "I already am something, I already know something," then there's nothing much that the person can impart to you. In fact, they won't even speak that much when somebody knows something already. But if they're quiet and they open their ears and in a submissive, humble way, then the person will be inclined to speak. And what's the third thing? Inquiry. Yeah, there's a magic by inquiry, because you can learn everything by asking questions. And the Shastra says, ask questions. Ask the best questions you possibly can, and then you can get the answers to those things. So these are, although this verse is so common, and we may hear it over and over again, if you concentrate on these 3 elements, they will you'll advance in spiritual life. Approach somebody who knows, and then employ these 3 elements, which are submission, service, and inquiry. And then you can get everything. And that's what Sanatana Goswami did when he approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even though he was such a learned person. He said, "I don't know anything. I don't even know who I am. Please just teach me from the very beginning, whatever you want to say." So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving this basic information about how the living entity is an energy of God, but he's fallen into the illusory potency. And this verse tells about how one becomes saved from that process. "If the conditioned soul becomes Krishna conscious by the mercy of saintly persons who voluntarily preach scriptural injunctions and help him to become Krishna conscious, the conditioned soul is liberated from the clutches of Maya, who gives him up." That's an amazing phrase in and of itself. Imagine how Maya gives up the living entity. Said, "This one's no longer under my clutches. In my clutches, he can go." Yes. In the last part of this sentence, Krishna, the conditioned soul is liberated from the clutches of Maya, who gives him up. So I was saying that Maya can release the living entity by Krishna's order. And you can see the importance of disseminating this information, because otherwise there's no other hope. And in this section, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells Sanatana Goswami that the living entity doesn't automatically come out of illusion, but one has to intervene. And that intervention, he said, Srila Vyasadeva has made the Vedic literature specifically to make that intervention. So by giving the spiritual knowledge, the Vedic literatures give information about the living entity's eternal relationship with Krishna, which is called Sambandha. The living entity's understanding of this relationship and his acting according to it is called Abhideya. Returning home back to Godhead is the ultimate goal of life and is called Prayojana. How is everyone so far? Okay? All right. So, then he tells the story of the astrologer. And Mahaprabhu says, by the words of the astrologer, the poor man's connection with the treasure was established. Similarly, the Vedic literature advises us that our real connection is with Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Savagyera Bhakye Muladhan Anubandha. Savagyera means the astrologer, of the astrologer, Vakye, by the assurance. So he spoke these words. The astrologer spoke the words to this poor man. Muladhan, with the treasure. He made his connection. Mula means to meet, right? To connect. Muladhan. He says, translated here, with the treasure. Anubandha. Connection is anubandha. So, Sarvagnera Bhakye Muladhan Anubandha. So he makes the poor man makes the connection with the treasure because of what? Vakye, the words of the astrologer. So he's an authority and he knows what he's doing. So he comes in and he tells him, you're not actually poor, you're actually rich. So Mahaprabhu says, Sarva Shastre Upadeshe Sri Krishna Sambandha. All the Vedic literatures, Sarva Shastre Upadeshe, instruct Sri Krishna, Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sambandha, the central connection. So this is the Shastra, is, especially the Vaishnava Shastra, is giving this information that Krishna is Krishna Mata, Krishna Pita, Krishna Dhana Pran. He's your mother, he's your father, he's the wealth of your life. And just by getting that information from an authoritative source, then one can become free. Just as the astrologer frees the other man. Mahaprabhu says, although being assured of his father's treasure, the poor man cannot acquire this treasure by such knowledge alone. Therefore, the astrologer had to inform him of the means whereby he could actually find the treasure. The astrologer said, the treasure is in this place, but if you dig toward the southern side, the wasps and drones will rise and you will not get your treasure. If you dig on the western side, there is a ghost who will create such a disturbance that your hands will not touch the treasure. If you dig on the northern side, there is a big black snake that will devour you if you attempt to dig up the treasure. However, if you dig up a small quantity of dirt on the eastern side, your hands will immediately touch the pot of treasure. Purport. The Vedic literatures, including the Puranas, state that according to the position of the conditioned soul, there are different processes, karma kanda, jnana kanda, the yogic process and the bhakti process. Karma kanda is compared to wasps and drones that will simply bite if one takes shelter of them. Jnana kanda, the speculative process, is simply like a ghost who creates mental disturbances. Yoga, the mystic process, compared to a black snake that devours people by the impersonal cultivation of Kaivalya. However, if one takes to bhakti yoga, takes to what?
Bhakti yoga.
He becomes quickly successful. He becomes what?
Quickly successful.
In other words, through bhakti yoga, one's hands touch the hidden treasure without difficulty. So, This is a very nice analogy to remember, that these shastras are authoritative voice speaking to us and teaching us exactly how to touch the treasure. And just think how valuable it is when we meet people who are wandering in the material world, not expecting to get out, not even thinking about it, and you place in their possession one of these literatures, which are specifically designed to inform the hapless living entity in the material world that you have a treasure waiting for you. You're just missing it. And when people become frustrated after many lives of trying to arrange for some kind of happiness in the material world and then becoming jnanis and trying to liberate themselves from the material world, Krishna says, Bahunam janmanamante jnanavam mam prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti sa mahatma sudurlabaha. A person who comes to the point of realizing that Bhagavan, Vasudeva, is everything. And then he surrenders. And then real life begins. Other than that, and Prabhupada's pointing out here in these purports, unless one gets that relationship with Bhagavan, then the likelihood of slipping down from that position and coming back to the material world is very great. Because only that relationship is satisfying enough to keep the living entity engaged in blissful activity. We have to have activity because we're eternally active. And if we don't get blissful spiritual activity, then eventually we'll gravitate towards the variety of the material world because it looks pretty good from a distance. And then he gives evidence about bhakti from the shastra that concludes that the devotional service is the only means for approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the system of bhakti is called abhideha. Abhideha means it's a practice, something you can actually do in your life. It's a very practical thing. When one actually becomes rich, he naturally enjoys all kinds of happiness. When one is actually in a happy mood, all the stressful conditions go away by themselves. No extraneous endeavor is needed. So this means when one takes the life of bhakti, then one's real happy life begins. And similarly, as a result of bhakti, one's dormant love for Krishna awakens. When one is so situated that he can taste the association of Lord Krishna, material existence, the repetition of birth and death, comes to an end. So, as he goes on explaining the power of the Vedic scriptures, he meaning Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his instructions to Sanatana Goswami, then tells him about the different incarnations of Krishna. And there's a whole science. Presented in the Shastra the details of the incarnations of the Lord and how he expands himself. Primarily here in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, he's told Sanatana Goswami that Krishna is the fountainhead of all other incarnations. Ete chamsha kala punsa Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam, Indrari Vyakulam Lokam, Mridiyant Yuge Yuge. He quotes a verse from the Bhagavatam, which says that of all the various incarnations mentioned in the Bhagavatam, Krishna is the source. And then he also quotes from the Brahma Samhita, Ishvara Parama Krishna Sakchirananda Vigraha. Anadi Radir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam, that Krishna is the supreme controller of all the controllers. What verse would you quote from the Bhagavad Gita if you were to establish that the Krishna was the source of everything? Aham Sarvasya Prabhava. Where is that verse? 10. So let's look at 10.8 in your Bhagavad Gita, which is on your book stand. I'll say, please repeat. Aham sarvasya prabhavo. Matak sarvam pravartate. Iti matva bhajante mam. Bhuta bhava samanvita. Translation, I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So when one comes to this knowledge that Krishna is the source of everything, then one can fully give oneself in devotional service to the Lord. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu delineated the science of Krishna's various incarnations, and it's rather detailed. He goes into explaining how Krishna first expands himself into Balaram, and he also explains how Krishna has kinds of expansions of himself that are identical with himself. Can someone give an example of expansions of Krishna that are identical to him? Balaram's not identical. Balaram is the same as Krishna, only he's a different color. And he wears different clothes and things like that. So he's not identical. So what is an example from the Srimad Bhagavatam of Krishna expanding himself into identical forms? Srivas Pandit was saying it, but then he doesn't want to take the microphone.
Krishna in Dwarka.
Krishna in Dwarka. So what happened in Dwarka?
He married 16,108 wives, and he expanded simultaneously into 16,108 forms.
So it wasn't that he had to wait, that each wife had to wait 16,108 days to see Krishna, to come to her house or her palace. Actually, he didn't have any of these little houses like they're here in Silicon Valley, but he had a palace for each one of his wives, right? And he had identical forms in each one of the house. I mean, the different forms were doing different things. And this was proved when Narada went around to the 16,108 palaces. Narada Muni went to Dwarka, and he visited Krishna in his various palaces. So in one place, Krishna was playing with his kids. They were riding on his back. Another place, he's talking to Uddhava about strategy. Another place, he's consorting with one of his wives and so forth. And this isn't, yogis can expand themselves also, but it's like a mirror image. See the same person there doing the same thing. So Narada Muni knows that trick because he's a mystic yogi also. But when he went to Dwarka, he saw that Krishna had expanded himself into identical forms, but they were all performing different pastimes. And then when he would leave the palace, he'd leave the palaces and all of the 16,108 different Krishnas would merge into one. And then he would go off and do whatever he did for the day. His various pastimes outside the palaces. And then he would come back to the palace, he'd expand into 16,108. And so this is one of the examples of Krishna's expansion. What's another one from the Bhagavatam where Krishna expands himself identically? Brahma Vimohana Leela. He expands himself into the cowherd boys, so they are in the cows, but they're not the same form as Krishna. I'm asking for times when Krishna expands himself into identical Krishna
forms.
The Rasa Leela. So the Rasa Leela, Krishna expands himself, and every gopi thinks Krishna is dancing directly with me. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did this also at Rathayatra, because when he was performing his dancing pastimes, everyone thought they were he was interacting with them directly. He had a way of manifesting himself equally. So Mahaprabhu gives these two examples of some of the ways Krishna manifests himself identically. And then he gives the example of another manifestation. Krishna expands himself into Balaram. And then, what are some of the expansions from Balaram? They're described as the Chaturvyuha. And the Chaturvyuha is Pradyumna, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudev. Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. And they're called Chaturvyuha. So these are another kind of expansion, different category of expansion of Krishna, one of his incarnations. And those Chaturvyuha expansions have other expansions. In fact, the Chaturvyuha expands many, many times, but there are primary expansions of the Chaturvyuha that are, they expand 24 times. Then there are other incarnations of Krishna which are different in form from him, but they are considered incarnations of Krishna. What are some of those? Mohini. Which one? Mohini. Yeah, Mohini is a Leela avatar. And then there are different categories of incarnations, like there are Shaktivesh avatars. Shaktivesh avatars, examples are Narada Muni. Narada Muni is a living entity, but he's specifically empowered by Krishna, and he has a special kind of Shakti. What's that Shakti? Bhakti Shakti. And then there are the four Kumaras, who are mentioned as Shaktivesh avatars. They're empowered incarnations of Krishna, but they're living entities. And what is their Shakti? Jnana Shakti, wisdom. And then Prithu Maharaj is also a living entity who's empowered by the Supreme Lord and is called the Shaktivesh avatar. What is his special Shakti? Administration. Yeah. So those are different kinds of avatars. And what are other kinds? They're Yuga avatars. So in every age, Asan Varna Trayo Yasya, this is mentioned by Garga Muni. When Krishna was getting his name, during his name-giving ceremony, this verse comes out, Asan Varna Triyo Yasya, that Krishna appears in different colors in different ages. Which page?
252 in the shloka book.
252 in your shloka book. You can have a look at this very important verse that shows up in the Shastra in many places. Two, five, two. I'll say, please repeat. It's on the bottom of 252. Asan varnas trayo yasya. Grinato nu yugam tanuhu. Shuklo raktas tata pita. Idanim krishna tam gataha. Garga Muni said, your son Krishna appears as an incarnation in every millennium. In the past, he assumed three different colors, white, red, and yellow, and now he has appeared in a blackish color. In another Dwapara Yuga, he appeared as Lord Ramachandra in the color of Shuka, or parrot. All such incarnations have now assembled in Krishna. So there are Leela avatars, there are Purusha avatars. These Purusha avatars are concerned with creating and maintaining the material world. From the Chaturvyuha expands Mahavishnu, and from Mahavishnu expand all the different universes from the pores of his body, and then into the each universe enters Garbhadakshay Vishnu, who then fills up half the universe with his perspiration, and then he lies in the water within the half of the universe, and then from his navel comes the Lord Brahma, and then he manifests as Shirdakshay Vishnu. And Shirdakshay Vishnu enters within the heart of every living entity. And he also has his own spiritual planet within each universe. And so these are Purusha avatars. Then how about the Manvantara avatars? And there are unlimited Manvantara avatars. They appear, how many? 24 in a day of Brahma? 14 in a day of Brahma. So there are... They're coming in the thousands and thousands of Manvantara avatars. We mentioned Leela avatars. So in this way, Krishna goes through the entire science, and there's a book written by Sanatan Goswami specifically about all these, the details of all these various avatars and their situations. And in this teaching that is mentioned here in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells what are the positions of the forearm forms of the Lord and how they hold their various weapons. They have conch shell, disc, club, and lotus. And then according to how they're situated within the hands of the various forearm forms of these avatars, they're known by various names. Did anybody memorize all those? The different positions? There was one devotee when we were at the old temple. He said, I memorized them all. And then he proceeded to recite the from memory the positions of each one. So if you'd like to engage yourself in that way, you can remember the different positions held by the Lord. So this detail of information comes from the Shastra and was imparted by Lord Chaitanya to Sanatana Goswami. And by understanding the origin of all these incarnations, that there is an origin of all these incarnations, and it's coming from Bhagavan, Sri Krishna. He's manifesting in all these different avatars. Simply by knowing about this, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Tyakva deham punarjanma naiti mam eti surjuna. You won't take birth again in this material world. So this is valuable information to cultivate, to understand our relationship with the material world, which is that I'm entangled in illusion, that I have an eternal relationship with Krishna as his servant, and there is a practical application of this knowledge, which is called bhakti or devotional service. And by engaging in that, I'll become reawakened in my original relationship with Krishna, and I'll have nothing more to do with this material world. I'll simply go back home, back to Godhead. So we've run out of time. Om Tat Sat. And now we're going to put away all the Shastra deities. We got to use some of them. Did we get any texts? We thank everyone for joining us online tonight. And we're going to continue the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to Sanatana Goswami on Saturday morning. Gaur Premanande Haribo.
Nacharyar Marman. Nacharyar Marman. Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, hey! Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.